Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 27, 2021. The spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service says the scheduled August 30th nationwide protest is unlawful.
We have not got any information, so we will be there to protect our citizens. Let the people go to their normal work. This was a very clear statement by IGP yesterday, all media. So we will be there on standby.
And the family of Christopher Allen, a journalist killed in South Sudan, has set up a writer prize in honor of his work.
You know, we're not going away. Christopher's family are not going away. And all of the NGOs who continue to campaign for justice for Christopher and for the other 10 journalists who were killed in South Sudan and across the world are not going away.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Police Service is warning South Sudanese not to participate in the anti-government protest plan for August 30th. The police have deployed forces at several locations in the capital, Juba. A police spokesperson says police officers have been instructed to arrest anyone who comes to the streets to protest. A member of the group calling itself People's Coalition for Civil Action, which is organizing Monday's protest, says his group notified the police about the non-violent march, and South Sudanese will come out to protest despite the police warning. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
There is a heavy police presence on Juba's main streets 3 days ahead of the planned protest. National Police Service spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says organizers did not inform police about the planned protest, and Inspector General of Police, General Majaga Kech, has ordered police to arrest anyone who comes out on the street to protest.
We have not got any information, so we will be there to protect our citizens. Let the people go to their normal work. This was a very clear statement by IGP yesterday, all media. So we will be there on standby. We are just putting our house in order in regard to these protesters, and we told them not to come out.
In July, the Juba-based civil rights organization, the People's Coalition for Civil Action, launched a public campaign for change, saying the revitalized transitional government of national unity, led by President Salva Kiir, has failed. The coalition has been mobilizing South Sudanese, including those outside the country, to turn out in massive numbers to express their dissatisfaction with the government's performance. Major General Justin says protesters will be arrested.
How can you call South Sudan to come out without consulting us? It will cause public disorder, by the way. You have to coordinate with the police. We give you the them. We give you the protection. And these people, we ask them to come so that we sit and arrange. So it will not be allowed.
Abraham Awolich, a member of the People's Coalition for Civil Action, says his group notified the police about the protest in a letter, and the coalition doesn't need approval from the police to carry out the protest.
The people of South Sudan are coming out on the 30th to protest. It is their constitutional right. You don't need to seek approval from anyone to exercise that power. So we are the people of South Sudan. We have the sovereignty, which is the ultimate power vested in us. And we can protest any time we are aggrieved by the state. You cannot ask the same state which has aggrieved you to give you permission to protest against it.
Awolich is in hiding following the arrest of Kwela Gwir, a colleague in the People's Coalition for Civil Action and former governor of Northern Bahar El Ghazali State. Awolich says any attempt to stop the protest proves South Sudan has an autocratic government.
You try to stop that, it is going to show that you are really a dictator and you are oppressor. You are oppressing your own people. That's what Khartoum government was doing, and that's why people took up arms. If you don't allow people to peacefully express their disappointment, you are leaving them with no option but to take arms against you. And we have had enough violence. So let the government open up political space. Let people express their views.
Awolich insists Monday's protest will be peaceful. He is asking business owners not to open shops and for people to stay home from work. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
The family of Christopher Allen, a journalist and a photographer who was killed on August 26 in 2017 in South Sudan, have set up a writer's prize to honor Christopher, who was killed on August 26, 2017, while reporting on fighting between South Sudan Army and the former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition. The prize provides a platform for South Sudanese secondary school students to share their stories, and winners will receive various prizes and professional development. Jeremy Bliss is Alan's cousin. He says the family still wants to know who killed Alan.
Every anniversary is very difficult for our entire family because whilst it should be a time for us to try and mourn Chris, it's also a painful reminder for us that we still haven't progressed in our attempts to find out what actually happened to him and to seek justice for his killing. So it's certainly a time for us to mourn, but it's also a time for us to be active and a time where we're reminded that Chris and the family are not being afforded the general protections that they should under their local law and international law.
I remember the family of Chris visited the South Sudan embassy in Washington to demand answers on who killed Chris. Can you bring us up to speed on some of the progress made by the family in the search for truth?
It's been a very complicated process for us, as you will, of course, imagine. Any family is not generally equipped to try and find transnational justice for a family member who's killed abroad, let alone in a relative war zone. Initially, we were really well advised by very supportive NGOs like the Committee to Protect Journalists and Rory Peck, but it took some time for us to understand exactly how, and we're still learning, how to navigate this complicated space, because although there are very clear obligations on South Sudan and on Christopher's home countries, the US and the UK, to investigate the killing and to prosecute where relevant, it's actually a far more political process than it is just law-based. So we've continue to explore lots of different routes to try and activate political pressure to try and cause these actors to do their job. That started with writing letters, that started with writing articles, speaking publicly, speaking on panels. But then we had the very good fortune of being joined by some exceptional lawyers and advocates at Doughty Street Chambers and at Howard Kennedy. And together with people on the ground in South Sudan and journalists, both in inside and outside South Sudan, we collected information. I wouldn't say it's evidence because it wasn't collected by an official body, but we started to collect what information was available to us. And this legal team was able to put together a case to answer to suggest that in Christopher's killing and in what happened to his body after that killing, there's the suggestion that war crimes were committed. That, I suppose, changed the shape of our campaign. Because once we knew that there was really a very significant case to answer, we could also then transform what our requests were to both South Sudan and to Christopher's countries. Where there's the suggestion of war crimes and where a war crime may have been committed, it's the obligation of those countries to investigate. South Sudan, in the first place, should be investigating his killing. However, South Sudan has obviously not shown great interest for the protection of human rights. So where there's a lacuna, where no one's going to act, it then is the responsibility of those who can to do so. And the US and the UK have that capacity. The US in particular has the capacity to investigate war crimes that are committed upon their own citizens outside of the country.
You are talking about efforts to engage the governments of South Sudan, the United States, and the United Kingdom. Chris was embedded with the former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, loyal to South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar. Has the family of Chris ever spoken with Machar?
So the family's reached out to Salva Kiir and to Riek Machar by the rebels. There have been conflicting responses, as there have been from the start. There have been confused narratives about what happened. First, there was a suggestion that Chris was a rebel. Then, because he entered illegally, that the deprivation of life was justified. And then eventually that it was a sad outcome of being caught in the crossfire. And their responses to more official submissions, also from the family, but also from Christopher's countries, have been equally confused. There's often a response that, in fact, there was an investigation undertaken, but there's never been any evidence of it. And we've heard this repeated on a number of occasions. You mentioned when Christopher's parents, John and Joyce, went to see the ambassador in Washington. He also suggested that there had been an investigation, but we've never seen any evidence of that, and there's never been any evidence of any outcomes. So I think it's obfuscation, and I think there's obviously no political will for either Riek Machar or Salva Kiir to proceed with the investigation. But certainly they have asked multiple times, and they've also asked through their home country, so the ambassadors or consuls from the UK and the US in Juba have made those representations and requested an investigation.
You are part of the family of Chris. If you get a chance to speak to leaders of South Sudan, what would you tell them?
My feeling is that it's really beneficial for everyone for this to proceed in a way that satisfies international law obligations. You know, we're not going away. Christopher's family are not going away. And all of the NGOs who continue to campaign for justice for Christopher and for the other 10 journalists who were killed in South Sudan and across the world are not going away. So to deal with these killings in an honorable, honest, open fashion will be better for South Sudan. It's not in South Sudan's interest to brush these things under the carpet. There are terrible things which have happened. There are many, many terrible things that have happened to many, many people there. But only by confronting these things will everybody be able to move forward in some sort of form of truth and justice.
How is the family remembering Christopher, especially his works on this fourth anniversary of his death?
It's been actually very complicated to work out how to remember Chris because we haven't begun that mourning process yet, but obviously Chris was very passionate about his work. And he was in South Sudan to help shine a light, to help give focus to the conflict there. And so recently, actually thanks to the suggestion of Mia Dolmion, we have put together a writing prize in his memory. And that writing prize is open to South Sudanese students in South Sudan or elsewhere in Africa, people of the secondary school age. And it's an opportunity for these students to describe their lives either in South Sudan or in the communities that they've created as refugees or as asylum seekers or migrants elsewhere in Africa. And with this opportunity, they can share their experiences and ideas and visions and hopes for the future of South Sudan or their lives. We felt that this is a really wonderful way to continue his work in shining a light on South Sudan and the people of South Sudan. I should mention, it's accompanied by a really wonderful prize, including the tools to continue with their writing, for the winner to continue with their writing. So that includes a laptop and scholarship for their schooling and also the publication of their essay. But then really importantly, it includes a mentorship for a year for that winner to help hone their skills as a writer. So if they write something that's in a journalistic style, it'll be a journalist, or if it's more narrative, maybe it'll be someone who's written a book. But we'll pair them with a relevant mentor for the year to make sure that they don't just receive the prize and get left on their own. They'll be supported throughout that period. So actually, if you'd go to christopherallen.org, christopherllen.org/prize. So that's christopherllen.org/prize. All the details are there. And also at that website, you can find a bit more information about Chris and also see some of his work from South Sudan and from the Ukraine.
That's Jeremy Bliss, legal expert, and Christopher Allen's cousin. He spoke with me from Melbourne, Australia. The medical charity Doctors Without Borders is expressing concern about a reported increase in the number of patients suffering from hepatitis E in Bantu. An official with MSF in South Sudan calls the situation critical. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Dr. Samrin Hussein, the Deputy Medical Coordinator for MSF Holland in South Sudan, tells South Sudan in Focus that two patients already died of hepatitis E since the end of July.
This year in July, we noticed a 4 times increase in the number of hepatitis E cases compared to the previous month. Also, the number of acute watery diarrhea cases increased by 50% in July compared to June. This is all directly related to the poor water and sanitation conditions in the camp.
Dr. Hussein says only 30% of households in the Bantu POC get enough water per international standards. She says a lack of soap and latrines as well as open sewers are among the poor hygiene issues contributing to what Hussein calls the appalling situation for the tens of thousands of people who live in the camp.
For the 100,000 people, it's only one latrine for 400 people, when based on international standards, it should be one latrine for 20 people. And most of the latrines are not functional, they are full, so open defecation is practiced a lot, and this all is a breeding ground for diseases. And that's why we've had this hepatitis E outbreak.
Dr. Duol Diem, Director General for Health in Unity State, says hepatitis E has been around for the last 3 years, but cases have surged in recent weeks.
Right now, we are getting 5 to 6 or 8 cases in a day. This is a big number. So the number of level of it has become endemic, and now the level has gone up. There's a surge of cases from 5 to 8 a week, and they are mostly in the IDP camp.
Dr. Diem says severe cases in the communities are taken to a MSF-run hospital inside the Protection of Civilians or POC site, while the less severe cases are treated in the household and monitored until they recover. He says despite these efforts, cases are still rising, so state officials are taking more aggressive measures to raise awareness among the communities.
Some community members are not aware even of the presence of the disease. So we are engaging everybody on the table that we get involved, especially to talk about it in the radios that we have here in public places, so that everybody will get the information. We have developed messages and talk about hepatitis E in the IDP camp.
Hepatitis E is a viral liver disease, prevalent in environments with poor water supply and sanitation. It's most commonly spread through the oral facial route when people ingest water or food contaminated by an infected person's feces. According to MSF, symptoms include acute jaundice, which turns people's eyes and skin yellow, as well as fever, reduced appetite, nausea, vomiting, and dark urine, although some people may not show symptoms at all. Dr. Hussein says people should always use latrines, wash their hands regularly with soap and clean water, and drink clean boiled water. She says people need to practice this hygiene and report cases of hepatitis to hospitals for proper management. Through August 15th this year, MSF says it diagnosed 204 people with hepatitis E in the Bantu camp. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and US Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Let us know what you think about this show. My colleague Nabil Biagio is on standby with comments we received from you this week. Over to you, Nabil.
Thanks, John. We heard from many of you this week on a wide range of topics, including protests planned in Juba for this coming Monday. Jacob Dior Machueng from Eurolake State says, "The continuous call from the People's Coalition for Civil Action for mass protests is not and will never be a demand for the people of South Sudan at this critical time. The revitalized peace agreement is on its sick bed, and if we provoke it with an uprising, where will it be implemented? We are not ready for another bloodbath. If we're tired of the current government, let us meet them at the ballot boxes during the elections." John Hamis from Bidibidi Settlement says, "The people of South Sudan are tired and fed up with what is happening on the ground on a daily basis, which is beyond human recognition. So I urge my fellow South Sudanese men and women, boys and girls, to critically observe the August 30th date set for civil action as the only tool to liberate ourselves at the hands of our current leaders who do not care about their own people. Shame on them." Peter Thorne from Yambio West in Equatoria State writes, "I have seen the location for demonstrations and that is our right, but my point is who is going to start while the leaders who have plans for protests are not available so that they can be examples to the citizen? I want them to tell us what time on that day and who is going to control the criminal activity because we don't want criminals to rob shops." Malweth Paul Achok in Juba says, "Thanks for the show. I have a message for those who want to go out on August 30th. Nobody has ever gone up by bringing others down, and no one ever crossed to the other side by cutting others to pieces. You can never use rumors and lies to achieve your purpose. Always be aware of people who sweet talk you by assassinating other people's characters in your presence. They will use it to cut you in your absence." Bol Yach from Juba writes, "I urge the government of South Sudan to immediately release the prisoners of conscience. On top is Abraham Chol Maketh, who was wrongly arrested by the government apparatus in early July. Up to now, this man of God has never been charged or produced before a competent court of law. I'm appealing to the government to either release Abraham without charges or produce him before a judge." Daniel Dudmajok from Rumbek says, "Hello VOA. We can't blame doctors in Juba because the government is not taking care of their needs. The little monthly amount they get, they cannot afford food for their family. My advice is for the government to increase their incentives." Someone who did not leave their name writes, "Hello VOA, I appreciate South Sudan President Salva Kiir who brings peace back in the country because if there is peace, things are going well and the lives of people are better. Let us support peace in our country and let us unite ourselves as one blood, one element, as well as one nation, and thanks to VOA for reminding us every day." Thomas Tapico from Juba says, "I am happy to be online with you. I always follow your program to know what is going on the ground and the world and in our country, South Sudan. Thanks." Reed Dag Lam from South Sudan writes, "I would like to join this wonderful website today so that I can know what is going on in South Sudan." James Roy Majok from Unity State Bantu Town says, "I really give thanks to the Sudan government and the South Sudan government for agreeing to reopen the border crossing lines for everyone to have good access for commodities, trading and health treatment to those who are in need of medical services." Malwalda Mashok from Juba writes, "Hello John Tanza and your colleagues. I'm appealing to the governor of Central Bank and the Minister of Finance to stop injecting just loans from the IMF into the market, because when they inject more money into the market and the prices are not controlled, then it is a challenge to laymen to meet the highest prices. So it would be good if they could control the market and regulate the prices rather than auctioning without benefits to the local population." Moses Manuel Deng from Juba says, I suggest the millions of dollars borrowed from IMF should be used to improve the economy through local production. It is now the second time this year that the money has been borrowed from IMF to reduce inflation, but there is not much change in the economic recovery. Therefore, some of this money should be used to fund agriculture to reduce the importation of basic food commodities, which will lead to a fall in skyrocketing prices in the market. John from Juba says, bravo Nabil and John for the updates on South Sudan. South Sudanese citizens don't trust their politicians due to wrong information to protect their positions, such as Commissioner of Yei River County, who said an ambulance belongs to UNHCR in Lasu Payam was burned down in Radio Miraya FM, which was untrue. We as citizens of this country need true leaders who take charge of security in the country, not self-interest and corruption. Mabor Alad Rengo from Rombek Lake State writes, I am giving much appreciation to Eastern Equatoria State Security personnel for apprehending the evildoers who have been targeting innocent road travelers on Juba Numeli Highway. They should be investigated thoroughly to explain why they always kill innocent citizens and let justice take place. Lado P from Arua writes, Hi VOA. My story of the week is the strike by truck drivers at the Numeli border. To the government, it is better to be corrupt while living in peace, because corruption, tribalism, and war can't bring peace, liberty, and prosperity. Love your show. Daniel Madingdeng from Malaupech, Lake State Rumbek says, I am saddened by the killing of Kenyan drivers who were butchered between Uganda and South Sudan border. These are our brothers who stood with us during our struggle for independence and are still bringing goods to our landlocked country. These barbaric acts must come to an end. The perpetrators must be brought to book and be punished. I'm also dismayed by the continued abductions of children and women in Upper Nile State. Enough is enough. Thanks for updating us on current affairs. May God bless you abundantly. Someone from the Bidi Bidi refugee settlement who did not leave a name writes, I have been following the political game in South Sudan and have no hope for peace if the parties are not united. We need civilian government, not military government. I hope one day change will come to South Sudan. Great job, VOA. Saber Isaac Khamis from Khartoum says, South Sudan is full of guns being processed by the local civilians as long as there is no control which stops any civilians, including soldiers. South Sudan security will not be stable. The entire country will continue to face insecurity of road ambushes. My condolences to the families of the victims. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of this program or of VOA. We always enjoy hearing from you. Keep those comments coming.
Thanks for sharing your comments on the issues in our news. Keep those comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We reserve the rights to read your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you in a dancing mood with the song Riziki by Jamnazi Africa. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sumbua akili ulimwengu umepasuka mahali Mungu alipanga usiku saya kulala mbona walimwengu mumebadili mipango usiku sasa imegeuka mchana na mchana sasa ni kama usiku jamani mi nashangaa Tafuta usiku Kodi za nyumba muna tafuta usiku Biashara nyingi mwafanya usiku Chai kwa mkate sasa mwauza usiku Mahindi chai
choma sasa mwauza usiku mali mali sasa mwauza.